Anyway, very briefly again, I am Yupik, and then recently discovered that I'm more than Yupik. I discovered that I'm also Aleut in Russian, so it's given me a whole new perspective and hoping to find out who my living relatives might be from the Aleut tradition, and who knows where the Russian connection may go. Really appreciate you being here, and if nothing else, I am in the College for Health and Social Welfare. I want to also acknowledge Dr. Cheryl Easley, past president of the American Public Health Association, but for us in Alaska, we are, I mean, extremely pleased and happy that Dr. Cheryl Easley found her way to Alaska because she is an advocate for Alaska Native people, and we need all the friends that we can get in the area of health and the welfare of our indigenous Native people. And so we're pleased that she's found her way to Alaska, and hopefully she'll make Alaska her home. Anyway, moving on. How does this work? Just one of these? Oh, okay. Oh, boilerplate. Anyway, we got our funding for the Administration on Aging. And there are two other resource centers, and they're doing a really great job. North Dakota's been there like over 20 years, and Hawaii just got started. They're in their fourth or fifth year, and they're doing amazing things. Anyway, just to give you a sense of Alaska and what it looks like, this is a cultural map of all the cultures that are there in Alaska. We have the Aleut Eskimo language is one group, but they separated linguistically. Ended up with Central Yupik and Aleutic Sukhpak, and then the Siberian Yupik and Inupiaq in the north, and then going into Kenya it becomes the Inuit, and then when you go to Greenland, they're the Kalaallit there. And then the Athabasca Naudé family of languages, there are 23 of them with 11 of them in Alaska. And one of my young colleagues from Fort Yukon says that we are Athabascan, but our languages are not mutually understandable. So we have an interesting situation of cross-cultural dynamics that we constantly have to be aware of in our work. And of course, many of also having been sent to boarding school, we've gotten to know each other from the early 40s, the early 50s as well. So at least it breaks down the barrier of cross-cultural dynamics and language. And then just to give you a sense of how big Alaska is, it's quite large with a very small population. And then the size of Alaska and the weather and the geography present all kinds of interesting challenges in our delivery of health services and whatever. Some of our people that are on the Aleutian chain actually take several days because of weather to make it into the major hospitals and unfortunately pass away along the way. And so then, of course, the socioeconomic problems are another challenge that there are constantly a situation there. Then to give you a sense of a visual of who we are a mixture of people. We do have elders that are still beautifully, wonderfully grounded in their culture. And then young people are, of course, there's a resurgence of cultural activity going on. So we're taking back what we lost through the era of the Russian era, as well as the connection with the United States. Then, of course, the geography and differences in Alaska is just amazing, as you can probably guess. And we also have interesting times during the change of the seasons. Then, of course, our cultural symbols are still there. There's a lot that we lost I should have turned this off. Excuse me, let me turn this off before it gets going on again. Excuse me. Anyway, moving on, we have also the grandparents. We're trying to give back the power to the grandparents or elders that they once had prior to contact. And so there's a resurgence of their activities of working with our young people because that's something that had kind of stopped when we were sent off to boarding school and also with the introduction of Christian religions and what have you that there's been a lot of pros and cons with that experience. a lot of dancing that still going on, and it's truly amazing the differences. And while we celebrate our similarities, we also dance our differences. It's truly beautiful. And the timeline that I'll be using comes from a study done by a Native American named Dr. Sheldon. He's a JD with an MA for the Kaiser Foundation study, and that'll be a kind of a roadmap that we'll be using to take a look at the health impact of Alaska Natives from the time of pre-contact to colonial times to post-colonial into the present. This is the overall timeline, which is one of the better ones that I've seen in a while. You will find that in the references that once you get online with this, I have three sources that I use, and I've taught in courses in some of these areas as well, so we'll be moving on with that. And then at the very beginning, before 1492, of course, I like what was said the other day. Columbus didn't know where he was going, didn't know where he got, and when he came back, didn't know where he came from. And then, of course, he thought it was in India, and he called those people Indians, so therefore the name is still there. And it's kind of the same thing with the word Eskimo. That was a name that somebody else gave us. But we aren't Eskimo or Yupik Inuk, Yaksuk, Bekalutik, and what have you. And then the whole policy, if we're looking at the relationship of Native people, Alaska Native people with the government, the federal government of the United States, we look at the whole history of the policy of conquest, of discovery and conquest or declaration of war. When the New World was discovered, the King of Spain was wondering how he can acquire all those resources that he thought might be over there, asked one of his philosophers, what arguments can we use to take land, to use resources from this new whole place that Columbus discovered? Francisco de Vitorio sat there and looked at it, and he says, well, there's the divine right of kings, and then there's the right of discovery. So if you go to an area and nobody's there, you can discover it. But trouble was, people were already there. And then the whole notion of conquest, where you just declare war, and doesn't matter if the other side didn't clear it or not, you just declare war, and if you're bigger and stronger, you just take what they got, and that's what happened. We also saw that in Hawaiian Islands. We also saw that in American Samoa and what have you. So looking at, moving on, and then we also look at the whole United States Constitution, which has all kinds of wonderful language of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the rights of human beings and what have you. And then there was this notion of the 13 colonies sitting there where they were located, surrounded by these Indian tribes, and say, oh my God, these guys can kind of pounce on us anytime they want. So we're gonna make a little agreement by saying, we won't take any more land, we'll be here. In words like, as long as the grass shall rise, the river shall flow. Those lands will be yours and these will be ours, we won't take any more. But of course that didn't happen. There were all these treaties that were signed. They were actually business contracts. So if you go to the National Archives in Washington, D.C., you will find these treaties that were signed between the federal government and the Native American people. And there was this notion of nation to nation. And then later on, there was this whole notion of trust responsibility of a stronger nation versus a weaker nation. And then the federal government or United States, in taking lands away from Native Americans, of course, took all of their resources. So all of the resources that this country now uses to have its wealth is really Native American resources. And so we hear the term, do Native Americans and Alaska Natives get free Medicare, free education? Well, we paid for it up front with the lands that had been taken away. And so we're trying to get a part of that back. And there are agreements now, nation to nation, and that nation to nation relationship is still in force. So looking at, again, the Congressional Appropriation for Healthcare, treaty making, I talked about that, Indian Health Services, and when it got started from the, and there was the Department of War actually dealt with the Native Americans that were there for a long time, the Department of War. So looking at pre-contact, we're looking at Native people who took care of themselves quite well. We had all kinds of healthcare techniques, and spiritual and physical, and we're looking at plants and animals, and surgery was done, and massage therapy and what have you. A lot of psychological and spiritual healing. And so after a while, those were banned out of the system But later on, the healthcare system in Alaska are now going back to what was originally there because we're discovering that the food that we had, indigenous food, is very healthy for us. And some of our procedures of human behavior are still well in place once we go back and rediscover them. So we're going back to what we once lost. Again, the Euro-American by the Russians in 1741, when they discovered us, there was all kinds of things that happened. They brought Spain diseases. There's a fellow by the name of Harold Napoleon who talked about the Great Death, all the different diseases that we didn't have any tolerance for. A lot of people died. There were whole villages that were left. Jim LaBelle, that I work with, who used to be one of my research associates, used to be adjunct faculty, now term faculty, in the department that my wife, Dr. Nancy Furlow, directs as interim director, talked about how he was in one Athabaskan village, and they showed him where the old village used to be, where everybody died, and so all they could do was burn all the houses down. We still have a lot of that history where I came from, where we just saw a lot of deaths, and so the story of the Great Death is still there, historical cultural trauma. And then looking at the Russian ships, of course, had their own doctors. They did take care of a few people that were nearby. Bobby Kelton, of course, smallpox was really terrible. When 20% to 66% Native people died, our population basis almost went down to very, very low. Then looking at that second phase, the acquisition of Alaska in 1867, the Treaty of Session, where Congress was able to negotiate in getting purchasing the right to rule, but there was never any question of the whole land question. So that was the basis of our native land claims. And there was an entirely different situation that happened in the lower 48 with the Indians there, because there was actually official declaration of war against those tribes. But in Alaska, the United States never did declare war on the native Alaskans. And so there was that difference that helped us to make a land claim settlement with the federal government. We're looking at the Allotment Act, which was a land that was given to through the Federal Homestead Act, for if so you as an American citizen went out there somewhere in a certain area where you can get land, you put four stakes in the ground, you ran back there and recorded it was yours. They never told Native people that they had that right for a long time, up until the 1960s when that was resurfaced, that law was still open to Native American people, so Native people were able to use the Homestead Act. And then we're looking at the Snyder Act that I'll talk about a little bit, which set up the stage on how healthcare would be delivered to Alaska Native people. And that whole area of the reorganization, which was led to the Indian Reorganization Act, really leads to some semblance of self-government. And the Merriam Report is another one I'll talk about, which really made some interesting statements of the disparities that existed with the general population versus Native Americans. So we're looking at the purchase of Alaska in 1867. So we had and there were all kinds of things that happened with the Russian-American Company. There were two parts of the Russian-American Company. There was the business side where they were looking at resources, and mainly the fur seal and the sea otter. And the Russians discovered very quickly that they couldn't catch the sea otter and the fur seal, as well as the Aleuts and the people on the coast. So they, in essence, enslaved the native people to harvest for them the fur seal and the sea otter. And of course, there was a great business. Russia made a lot of money. China was a big market for all those furs. And when you look at that fur seal that you find out in the Aleutian chain and what the Russians also got from the Aleuts, it's amazing how beautiful the fur seal is. I finally got to see some on St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea. In fact, our dean, when our project got started, traveled all over Alaska with us. I like to look at Alaska as a face, if you look at Alaska kind of like that. Well, where we were in Point Barrow with the dean was right here. Point Barrow. And we went to Fairbanks to meet with the Nakanaga Alaska Native elders at the Baskins right here in the ear of Alaska, and I was there for a while. But I grew up here on the chin of Alaska. We went to Nome, right under my nose, and went to Kotzebue right up here. And then During that time, there was also a U.S. weather observer by the name of Edward Nelson, who was a weather observer, came up to Alaska, but he collected all kinds of artifacts. I'll kind of give you a little bit of information, because in our Yupik tradition, when we created our massacres who were ceremonial, we never looked at them as art. They were ceremonial. When we got done with them, we either burned them or put them or gave them back to nature. But thanks to Edward Nelson, they are in the museum, the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. And some of those ceremonial objects we were able to get back through the what was called the Native American Grace Protection Repatriation Act, where we had to prove that they were ceremonial, and we had to make arguments with the legal system to eventually get them back. Again, that's another one of those challenges that we as Native Americans, Alaska Natives, are faced with in terms of proving that we did have those things as ceremonial and religious pieces that relate to our health, our mental health. Episcopal Church did all kinds of things. Dr. Roeming came to the Bethel area where I'm from, and the Department of Bureau of Education really took care of a lot of health for a little while, but was later transferred to the health department. Supply ships did all kinds of things. And then we're looking at all these kinds of histories of hospitals and what have you. And the Merriam report compared the Indian health services to health services for the general population. It discovered that there were all kinds of disparities between the two, the kind of health delivery services that the general population have versus what Native people got, which was really on the very, very low end. So anyway, there were some really nice landmarks, or rather time markers, that have happened throughout this connection between the Russians and our connection with the United States. The Russians were a little bit friendlier in one area. They actually allowed Native people to read and write their language using the Russian Cyrillic. When the Americans came, it was English only, and we were sent off to boarding school, and their policy was, what was it? There was a term that they have, kill the Indian, save the man, and sending off to boarding school. We're still feeling the effects of the boarding home experience, both in the lower 48 and Alaska. Like in the boarding school and Wrangell Institute that I went to, that Jim LaBelle and I went to, there were pedophiles there, and they were allowed to be there. And all those kids that went there, sometimes for the whole duration of their grade school, sometimes they were there for the entire 8 years, never got to go home sometimes. And when they finally did go home, they would find that a lot of their relatives died, causing all kinds of trauma. And Jim LaBelle was a very brave man who, in a public setting on television, talked about his personal experience in Wrangell. We had begun to talk about it because a lot of us had gone to boarding school. Our cultural knowledge died when we sent off to boarding school. We did not know how to raise children in the traditional way. So there's a whole generation of these young people, because they had lost the cultural knowledge, that had caused all kinds of problems in terms of raising our young people. And the effects of some of that we see here today is that we have the highest rates of suicide in the nation. And the highest rates in almost everything, diabetes, obesity, and cancer's high, and all of those medical dynamics, we still have that disparity. We do have an improved health delivery system, really getting close to self-governance, which is really a positive story, but we still have a lot of work to do. And so when Jim LaBelle told that story, it started a whole movement of many other people who wanted to talk about it, in talking with healthcare people, in resolving the historical cultural trauma, because we're still affected by that. And so there was a healing convocation that was implemented by the first Alaska Native Athabasca woman Episcopal minister, who started the healing convocation. So we're looking at finding ways of chatting with our people that have gone through that trauma. We also unfortunately had Catholic priests who were pedophiles that did nasty things to a lot of our people, and they were sent to Alaska because they didn't want to keep them wherever they came from. And so we're feeling the effects of that, and we're dealing with it by developing culturally appropriate behavioral health programs in addressing that issue, because it has to be addressed. We can't just bury it under the rug and hope it goes away. It doesn't. It stays there. And then along the way, of course, Native Americans have the highest per capita rate of serving our country. It may have to do with the warrior spirit that our people had. We have the highest numbers. I mean, we've always had the highest numbers. When I get back to Anchorage on the 10th, the next day on the 11th, on the November is the Native American Heritage Month in the United States. So we're celebrating that at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus by having the first honoring Alaska Native and American Indian veterans at our campus. And hopefully it'll become a yearly event where it won't be just a couple hour program, but hopefully we're gonna set up the door to be a full day activity of honoring our veterans that have served our country, and looking at holding workshops on historical trauma and things like that. So we're kind of looking forward to the opportunity of healing ourselves. And so we're looking at finding more and more stories of who did what, how many of our veterans did all kinds of amazing stories. Recently, as I put together the list of people that I want to have on our panel discussion on the 11th of November from 6 to 9, I did find two Alaska Native two-star major generals. One was Major General Jake Lesterkoff, Aleut, Korean War veteran, amazing story. General John Schaefer, Inupiaq, who General Easley knows really well, is an Inupiaq man from Kotzebue, became Major General, was in special forces and jumped out of airplanes and parachuted and everything like that. But unfortunately, he had a series of mini strokes and he had to bow out of our gathering. And then we have this one, just amazing stories. One of the elders that I knew from all of my life, that knew my mother and father, he spoke fluent Yupik. He was Yupik and Norwegian. I knew that he was in World War II, but I didn't know the story. He was actually trained in Camp X in Canada in the British Office of Secret Services, spy school. And he learned how to go into submarines and go to the Philippine Islands to repatriate American prisoners who were in the Japanese prison camps. Amazing stories. One Inupiaq man that I met that I could barely understand, when he told a story in a program that I called Healing Through Remembrance, told me that he had orphaned in Point Barrow. People mistreated him, so at night he would let all their dogs loose. And the elders knew it was him, but they couldn't prove it. The Presbyterian Church said, send us your smartest, brightest young man. We'll send him to college, free education and all that. So the elders chose Lazarus off to go off to Presbyterian school. When he got there, it was a theology school, and he did not want to become a minister. So along comes World War II, joins the army. He was actually in the Normandy invasion. He was actually... I hadn't described to me what he did. He was exactly one of those guys that were climbing on the ropes on the hill being shot at. Survived France, Belgium, Germany. Stayed for the burial detail. Remembered that there was this, didn't want to go back home to Barrow. Remembered that the French lady that I met was back in France. Found her, married her, raised a family, lived all of his life in France. Was learned construction trade. Are we running out of time? Okay, so I'm going to quickly move on. Incredible stories for healing that I wanted to mention, because we are taking control of what's happened to us and finding our own culturally appropriate ways of healing ourselves. Again, we're looking at, once you get home and you get online, you'll have all this detail. There's the historical time markers. The Bureau of Indian Affairs did all kinds of wonderful things. Boarding school did train us. There was also a program of assimilation where we were sent off to become sent off to the cities, and hopefully we would stay there. But all of us, as soon as we earned money, we came back to Alaska. And then we're looking at termination, where they told us that we were no longer have the federal relationship, nation relationship with the federal government. But we did try to get some of those overturned, and some of them were self-determination came in the Self-Determination Act, which really led to self-governance where we controlled our own health programs, but we still have to get funding from Congress. So we have another program we called Termination by Appropriations, which we're afraid of. So we're constantly fighting for funding because we still have the disparity of health with Alaska Natives. It's improving, but it's still a slow, painful process. Like I said, we still have the highest suicides. Our young people are killing themselves. While on the one hand, we have some singing and dancing and cultural revival, we need to do more with that so that we can save the lives of our people. And the Aleut people were enslaved by the Russians. They were also enslaved by the United States because they loved that fur money that they were getting that the United States reaped the benefits of. And they basically got, they were also sent to canneries in Southeast Alaska with no medical, no food, no nothing, because they were to protect them from the attack from the Japanese, during that war. And so there's still dialogue going on. There was a settlement between the Aleuts and the federal government. Clinton made a policy of government-to-government relationship. We hope that that's still going to be strengthened. We're looking at the Indian Health Care Improvement Act that's still being, that we still have to deal with. Some of you that are in the Commission Corps probably know about this. And so it's a constant fight in terms of dollars for delivery of health for Alaska Native people. And we do have a national Native American Health Board. We do have the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium that represents all the 13 regional health services in Alaska that look at delivering the best service possible to Native people. There's one village that did quite well in their debit program where they are completely cavity free. So when you give it back to the people who know how to work their own problems, we really do meet some success. So if nothing else, we're looking at improving our connection with the federal government. APHA does great things every once in a while in supporting resolutions that with our priorities, and we're hoping that through the work of Dr. Cherry Easley as past president and others that we get to get support from this organization, and those of you that are in this will hopefully be able to tell those people, your sphere of influence, to help us improve our way of living through better medical care. We do have the Alaska Native Commission that's made up of Native people, Native leaders in terms of, that meets still every once in a while to do our report card of where we are. They did a great job in this first gathering of the status of Alaska Natives and health care to Native people. Then, of course, there's all kinds of discussions on how we treat Native people as we speak right now in terms of how do we deal with being covered for health care, and that's something that you can read yourself later on. And then we made great strides, we still have a lot of disparities. Global warming is affecting us. It's all doing all kinds of things. We still have a lot of water sewer problems. We still have toxic waste still out there that needs to be cleaned up. Housing still needs to be improved. A lot of intentional, unintentional injuries and death that I talked about. All kinds of cancers, diabetes, tuberculosis. We have the highest rates of diabetes, so we're looking at prevention. And substance abuse is still high, FES, FAE. But when Senator Stevens really did appropriate some money for FES, FAE, there was a marked, noticeable improvement of the numbers going down. So when we do it right, it does help. So we're still looking at problems, patient travel. We're still looking at the socioeconomic problems that exist in Alaska. And so hopefully those of you that are decision makers can help us in looking at that disparity of what funds the other groups get, which, and then what funds Alaska get needs to have just a little bit more because of the high cost of living, the high cost of transportation, whatever. But we do need more comprehensive data systems of healthcare. So hopefully those of you that do good research can help us design programs to do better research so that we can develop more stronger arguments for more additional funding. Our elders are still there, still teaching us. They're beautiful, they're wonderful. Unfortunately, they're leaving us too fast. So we have a lot of elders in training. These are the references that I did part of my work in. I used to teach courses on Alaska Natives and where the roots of tribal law. And the Alaska Native Physical Health, the Institute of Circle Pole Institute of Social Economic Research really did a great project working with the Alaska Science Commission, Alaska Health Commission. And here's the contact information. So those of you can, that would want to look at the reports that we do it with our project, you just simply type in elders.ua.alaska.com. You'll see our reports. You'll see our links. You will see our PowerPoints. Use anything that you want to use within that. You don't need to worry about copyright. Those are public domain materials that on that website, as long as you occasionally make a statement saying that you got this from our website. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity of chatting with you, and it's way beyond my time. And I wish you well in your work, and I pass this on to the next speaker. In Yupik, we say, Koyana Chaknik Tampere March, and we'll see you down the road somewhere.